Right, well, let's talk about New Year's resolutions, right? Or as one writer put it, the anxiety opportunity. I don't know if that resonates with anyone. If we do something that we know is going to be bad, or that we know is just going to make us anxious, like, why do we keep doing that? Why would we make resolutions when we know we're not going to fulfill them all? I don't know what the stats are, but surely it's like 99% of New Year's resolutions don't get followed through. That's a stat I just made up. If we do something that we know is going to make us anxious, that we know is going to make us fail, like, why do we keep doing that? Why do we keep making those things? I think there's this interesting thing that we as humans, we have a drive to make something, to be something, to kind of be a part of something bigger than ourselves in this world, to really experience meaning, to even really experience joy. That drive is there. It's like an engine. It's always on. It's not like that engine is off. It's on. But by ourselves, it's an engine that just runs amok, just kind of goes wherever it wants to. So no wonder we can't keep a New Year's resolution. We're all over the place. So now we have this double problem. Not only are we not keeping the New Year's resolutions with this engine that runs amok all over the place, now we're not actually part of that joy, part of that meaning, part of that something bigger that we wanted to be the reason why we made those resolutions to begin with. So we're failing on both accounts. Now, you may not be a New Year's resolution kind of person, but this is true of every single one of us. You know, whether we write plans down or not, we don't have a drive that works by itself. We just don't. It's there, but we don't really know how to harness it and how to focus it, what direction for it to go. But in that, Jesus comes to us, and he directs us. He gives us a path. Jesus, who calls himself the way, provides a way for this engine to run, for the things inside of us to see the fruition that we all want. Not to produce anxiety, but to produce joy. You want meaning? You want to be a part of something important? You will get to experience those things as well. In fact, you'll have them, if you follow Jesus, you'll have them in amounts that you couldn't even fathom before. So in this passage that we have here, and there's so many good things in here, and we're just going to get to a few of them. In this passage, Jesus calls himself the true vine. And we're going to take a look at what that means. And he calls us the branches. What do branches in a vine do? Well, they remain. And there are actually really good results that come when a branch remains in the true vine. And so let's talk about where Jesus starts and him calling himself the true vine. Christ as the true vine. Verse 1 there, I am the true vine. My Father is a gardener. Jesus being the true vine as compared to all other imposter vines that are out there. He is the true one, single. There's so many things, so many people, so many activities, so many ideas, all saying this is the right way to live, this is the right path. Jesus here says, no, I am the breath. I'm the path. I'm the true vine. There is no other. There is no alternative. There is no me plus anything else. It's just me. I'm the true vine. Now, he can say this because he's God himself. How arrogant of a human being, a mere human, to say, you know what? I'm the true vine. You all should organize all your lives around me. That would be horribly arrogant unless he's God. This is Jesus saying, I'm God. And he's not merely a pathway to God, not merely an example to look up to, not merely a good story that we tell each other. All those things are true, but this is Jesus telling us something that plus more, that he is God himself. So remaining in God means life. Not remaining in God means death. Who else can talk like that and it be true? Nobody. Jesus is the true vine. He's God himself. But as the true vine, as God himself, notice how tender he is. He's making it clear, he's very honest with, hey, this is the path for life, this is what death looks like. But he's using this kind of metaphor of gardening, of pruning and taking care of, like a gardener loves their garden. A gardener isn't like, oh, I hate these plants. I wish I could just destroy them all. No, a gardener loves the garden, and loves the vine that's growing and tends it. And this metaphor is how he's using to teach his disciples as to what remaining looks like so that they would not miss out on life. So we learn not only who God is, but the kind of God that he is. Jesus is God, yes, and a very like well taken care of kind of God. He's kind, he's patient. What gardener does not have patience? He has life for all who want it. Now there are all sorts of other vines that are out there. One of the vines that all of us are probably connected to in some way or another is the vine of the middle class path to success. If I could just get a little bit of that, like I'll be set. A good job, good pension, a really good house. So this is what I need. Now, we don't say that, but that's how we live. What do we think? We kind of live that way because if we ask our children what we really care about, if we ask our friends what we really cared about, would they say, oh, it's obvious from not just the words you say, but the way you live your life, it's obvious that Jesus is the true vine of your life. Probably that's not always going to be true from our kids or our friends. Do they understand that Jesus is the true vine, not just in words we say, but in how we actually live, what we do with our time, what we do with our relationships, and what we do with our emotions, what we do with our money, all those kinds of things? Is Jesus the true vine, or do we treat him as an add-on? Or do we really kind of just want to get a little bit of both? A little bit of Jesus, but then also like a little bit of this, because I don't want to miss out on that. So I'll get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. That's not how it works. Jesus is the true vine. There's only one. There can only be one true vine. Now, this doesn't mean that we don't care, that we'll never care about a career or that we won't care about other things, but it will change how we go about that career. It'll change how we view it. It will shape our fears. It'll shape our dreams. Only Jesus is the true vine. And the reason is that only Jesus is worth being the true vine in your life. All other vines are just not even worth it. Everything else lets us down, not so the true vine. Of all the imposter vines out there, only one can give the branches what they really need. Only one can. Jesus is the true vine. So if he is that, then that makes us the branches. And when I say us, in this passage, that means his followers, his disciples. Not every single human being, but people who follow Jesus are now the branches. Not every person, but every person who follows him. The branches are Jesus's followers. Now, if that's not you, then this is an image of what life could be like, or an image of what Christianity does look like. A church is a collection of branches. That's what we are. That's what we get to be. Now, branches can do a lot of things. One of the craziest things that a branch can do is grow fruit if it's connected to the true vine. They take nutrients from the vine, and they are pathways for fruit to develop. No branches, no fruit. Branches are not optional. Branches are necessary. Every single branch. The fruit depends on the branches. They're not incidental. They're necessary. Every single branch is required for God's vine to grow, for fruit to flourish. Every single one, regardless of however you might view yourself. But I don't really matter that much. You are required. You're not incidental. No branch is a mistake. No branch is a waste. They all matter and they all have a role to play. So branches are important. They're necessary. But branches on their own are worthless, completely worthless. There's no point in having a branch that's not connected to a vine. That's called rubbish. It's worthless because fruit can't grow there. It's gathered up, it's thrown into the bin, burned up, destroyed forever. This is weighty stuff. This is life and death, either or kind of stuff. But Jesus, the true vine, tells us the branches in verse 5, apart from me, you can't do anything. You're like, all those big kind of ideas that you want, all those passions that you have in your heart, you can't really do any of that in the way that you really want to, apart from me. That's what he says in verse 5. Now, I'm not sure we really believe this. We as Christians, I'm not sure we really believe this. We think apart from Jesus, we can do most things. We might need him for a thing or two, but really, we're kind of fine on our own. We might need a bit of him and maybe top us up every now and then, especially if we're feeling down. We don't really want to be as dependent as a branch. I know I don't want to. I want to have a bit of independence. I want to be like, I kind of want to do my own thing. But it will always go better for us when we realize who we really are and who he really is. It will always go better for us when we realize that we are branches, merely dependent, and he is the vine. Everything that the vine has is for the branches. If indeed we are a branch, the best thing that we can do is remain. The best thing a branch can do for the health of the whole plant, for fruit, for itself, is the simple act of remaining. Now, that's weighty, what we're talking about here is life and death, but it's not a high bar. A branch isn't expected to be a vine. It's a branch. Likewise, we're not expected to be some kind of like religious Marvel superhero. We can do all the things and we're victorious and all the things that we put our minds to. We're expected to be who we are, human being. So where are we? If that's where are we going to be as human beings? We're going to be in him because we're a branch. There's humility here because we're just branches. But there's also dignity because we're not just branches. We're just branches connected to the true vine. Both of those things. We're probably more humble than we probably ought to, but also there's more dignity than we thought of as well. Just as we're made in God's image, we're just images. We're not God. We're just images, but we're images of God. Same kind of thing. We're just branches, but we're branches of the true vine. Living in this reality, one of the reasons why Jesus is saying this, it should be a relief. You don't have to be anything more than a branch. That's it. That's what you get to be. It should be invigorating. If you are a branch, do you understand how important that makes you? You're not just some kind of passive player. You are active and involved. A branch by itself is nothing. A group of branches remaining in the true vine, that's everything. Do you even get what it means to be connected to the true vine? The vine that will never wither, that's what we're connected to. The vine that will always have all that we need, that's what we get to remain in. It's not like, oh, I have to remain in the vine. No, we have to remain in this thing that's going to give us everything that we always need. This is who we are, more humble than we thought, but also with a higher calling than we thought, because we are branches of the true vine, nothing more and nothing less. And it's a beautiful place to be because that's how we're created to be. So if we're branches of the true vine, and our main command is to remain, that might sound nice and maybe churchy and spiritual. What does that actually mean? What is Jesus trying to tell us here? Let's spend some time looking at that. So there's a mutual remaining happening here. We remain in Jesus, and Jesus remains in us. It's not just, we don't only just remain in him. If we remain in him, he remains in us. More of him in us means we are remaining more in him, and it's like this cycle that kind of feeds itself over and over and over again. It's like a mutual indwelling, like living together, dwelling together kind of thing. The theological term for this is one of the most comforting theological topics that I know of. It's called union with Christ. To be united with Christ means you are connected in a way that will never be destroyed, will never be severed. Through Jesus, we're united to him, and he's united to us. That means all that he has is all that we get. He has a lot because he's God. In fact, he's got everything, I think, and he gives that all to us. Through Jesus, we're united to him, and he's united to us. And the deepest part of who we are, we are part of him. He's welcomed us in, and not just to himself, but through him, we get connected to the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, who from the beginning have been nothing but loving in this kind of infinite way towards each other. Fundamental who God is love, because there's been three persons. There's always been love from the beginning. There's never not been love, because God is three persons. And that's different than other religions. And so the Father and Son and the Spirit are always loving each other. We get to be a part of that. And not just us individually, but us as part of the church. We get brought out of our kind of little darkness, our engines running amok kind of thing, and brought into this wonderful family of love. This is amazing. This is what we get to experience. This is what the church, regardless of what the churches look like on the outside, that's actually what's going on the inside of the church. Last week, we looked at how Jesus told his followers to come to me. Here he says, remain in me. Jesus' command to come to me wasn't just a one-time thing. It is a one-time thing, but it's an ongoing come to me, keep coming to me. Come to me and stay there, remain here. Once we come to him, we remain in him. And there's a few things that Jesus brings up, a few things that we're called to remain in. In verses 4, 5, 6, and 7, Jesus says, remain in me. It's almost like he wants us to get this. I'm going to say it in verse 4. I'm going to say it in verse 5. I'm going to say this in verse 6. I'm going to say this in verse 7. They're not going to get it. So I'm going to say also in other places, in other parts of the Bible, remain in me, remain in me, remain in me. Where should we remain, Jesus? Oh, yeah. You guys forgot. Remain in me. That's what we're supposed to do, to live with him, to make him the center of our lives. That means in all that we do, not just the churchy things, but in all that we do, he's the center. Jesus being the center means we don't work for our boss first. We work for the Lord first. Jesus being the center means our primary role as parents is disciple maker. Jesus being the center means that our role within our friend group is to encourage people in God's love. That doesn't mean we don't do other things, but that's primarily what we're there for. Jesus being the center means that our money, our time, our energy, our relationships is first an opportunity for God and his mission before it's anything else. Jesus being the center means our ideas about right, what is right or wrong is formed by him first. Jesus being the center means we don't make church about us. We give first, and then we get to receive. And that's actually like a much more fulfilling way to live. There's some aspects of what it means to remain in him. And one can probably say our whole life with Jesus is continually uncovering what it means to remain in him more than we did before. But he also says a few other things to remain in. In verse 7, Jesus says, remain in my words. To remain in his words, we have to at least know them. We can't remain in something that we don't even know what it is. And we don't know them if we don't read them, and we won't read them if we don't make it a priority. It doesn't just kind of magically happen out of nowhere. The easiest thing that we do as people is drift. If you don't do anything in life, you can live, probably, and you just kind of drift. I've not known one single person who's drifted into a better life. I've not known one single person who's drifted into purpose, who's drifted into more of God's love, and drifted into a deeper relationship with God. Always necessitates action, some kind of movement, some kind of intention towards something. You can't remain in him if you don't remain in his words. The reason is really simple. Of course, I'm a preacher, I'm going to say it. Just read the Bible. Just read the Bible. It's so simple. Just read the Bible. I mean, we have these bookmarks in the back there. It's just so like, will people read the Bible more? That would be amazing. I guarantee you it will change your life. You spend 5 more minutes than you did before, even if it was 0 minutes before, you spend 5 minutes reading the Bible, it will completely change your life. It will mess you up in a real good way, in a real good way. So we remain in his words in verse 7. There's another thing Jesus tells us to do is remain in his love in verse 9. And actually, he says this in a way that's a bit different than maybe what we would expect, because remaining in Jesus' love means keeping his commands. There is not either or, one equals the other. Let me just go there. If you have verses 9 and 10 in front of you there, it says, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. That's great. This isn't even part of the sermon. This is a little freebie. As much as the Father has loved the Son, that whole infinite love that's happened even before the beginning of time, even all that stuff, as much as that love, that's the same kind of love that we have. Jesus has loved us with the same kind of love. That's a lot. We can't even talk about how much that is. Okay, so anyway, that's an amazing thing. Let's just pretend like we know that in the back of our heads. So as the Father has loved me, so I've loved you. Now remain in my love. Remain in that love. Who wouldn't want to remain in infinite love where an all-powerful, all-loving God is working out the best for us? That sounds like the best place for us to be. So how do we remain in his love? Verse 10, he tells us, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. And then Jesus says, I've done this. I'm not asking you to do something that's never been done before. Jesus has kept the Father's commands perfectly, not in the way that we do it. And Jesus remains in the Father's love perfectly, not in the way that we do it. But that's the model for us, is to remain in him, in his love, by keeping his commands. That's not generally something we would think of very often. Sometimes we might think remaining in Jesus' love is having a lot of passion for him or emotion for him or something like that. But here, just Jesus saying, if you follow these words that I say, and you should know them because you're gonna remain in them or read them in some way, if you follow those words, that's how you remain in my love. I mean, sometimes we can have the wrong idea that our actions are not connected to God's love, but they are always connected. If you know his love, it changes your behaviors, just like any kind of relationship that you might have. And with this relationship, it's going to change everything. It's how Jesus said he lived. And so for all who remain in him, if that's who we're following, that's how we have to live as well. The opposite is true as well, though. Not following his commands, we grow more callous to his love. We kind of miss it. We forget about it, and we don't really care about it. So they're linked. All these remainings are linked. If we remain in his words, we can't live as if we didn't. I mean, we can, but there's a word for that, hypocrites. No one signs up to be a hypocrite. So if we remain in his words and we live as if we are, we remain in his love by following through with his words. It means submitting what we think are good ideas as to what Jesus says and following through in our actions with them. Then and only then are we like remaining in him. That's what it means to remain in him. This is a completely different way of going through life. Don't be surprised when remaining in Jesus means your life has to change. It will always be changing because we're never really going to get to the destination completely. But this is the best thing for us, the absolute best thing for us. Andrew Murray wrote a book called Abide in Christ on this very topic that I read maybe earlier this year. It's really fantastic, and it's one of those books that's been on my to-read list for a super long time. I finally read it. But here are some of the best quotes that he has related to these verses. It's Andrew Murray writing. He says, all the vine possesses belongs to the branches. The vine does not gather from the soil its fatness and its sweetness for itself. All it has is at the disposal of the branches. And all the branch possess belongs to the vine. The branch doesn't exist for itself, but to bear fruit and to proclaim the excellence of the vine. It has no reason of existence except to be of service in the vine. How little have I understood how great my need, but also how perfect my claim to all his fullness. On my part, abiding is nothing but the acceptance of my position, the consent to be kept there, the surrender of faith to the strong vine, still to hold this feeble branch. As it was Jesus who drew thee when he spake, come. How often do you get to say spake? As it was Jesus who drew thee when he spake, come, so it is Jesus who keeps thee when he says, abide. The grace to come and the grace to abide are alike from him alone. The same Jesus who tells us to come is the same Jesus who tells us to abide, and he has grace for both. That's amazing. That's what following Jesus is about. That's what remaining in him is about. So what should we do then? Well, we should live in such a way that we become present to this kind of God, because that's who he is. He's not hiding. We're the ones who hide. He's there. He's the vine, always supplying his followers with everything that he has. Now, we talked about verse 5, apart from Jesus, we can do nothing. But if we remain in the vine, then equally true is Philippians 4:13. Through Jesus, we can do everything. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. That means if we're connected to the true vine, we have a power, an unending reservoir of goodness that is always flowing to us, a white hot beam of love constantly being blasted in our direction, never going on standby mode, never kind of going somewhere else or whatever, always on you all the time. So we can do all that we're called to. And we can also be okay with leaving all that we're not called to. We're only called to a certain amount of things. This also affects our prayer life. We don't really have a lot of time to talk about this, but in verse 7, Jesus says, if you remain in me and my words in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. That doesn't always mean, oh, Jesus, please get me a new car, and like it comes out of nowhere. It's his words remaining in us. I was just talking with somebody before the service of him. Someone said, oh, I was praying for this thing and it happened kind of exactly how I was praying for it. It's like, isn't it crazy? When we pray, God actually does stuff. I still find that surprising. Why do I find that surprising? What a lack of faith from this feeble branch. If we remain in his words become our words. That means our prayers become his words because our heart gets molded more into his shape instead of the contorted shape that we have. If you want a more effective and powerful prayer life, read the Bible more. Get into this. Get his words into you so that you can pray them back. Now, when we remain in Jesus, there are so many good things that come our way. Here are a few. We'll talk just two of the results of remaining in Jesus, fruit and joy. Now, Jesus doesn't just say fruit. He says much fruit, lots of fruit. Now, we keep saying this word fruit, and in church, you might hear this word fruit. Like, what the heck is that word? Like, what's the deal with that? Fruit is what it means to see God's love multiplied, and it's used in various ways throughout the Bible. The very first command given to humans was to multiply, to be fruitful. And we can be fruitful by having biological children, but then there are many other ways that we multiply God's love. In Galatians, that we'll be studying tonight, we won't get to this section yet tonight, Paul lists some of the traits of what it looks like to be fruitful. Love, joy, peace, forbearance, gentleness, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control. Now, some of us might become biological parents, but all of us, if you're a follower of Jesus, if you're a branch connected to the true vine, all of us are called to be spiritual parents, every single one of us. To be a spiritual mother or father is to be a part of multiplying God's love. That's what fruit looks like. That's what we are. The good thing about how this works out in the church is there need not be only one spiritual parent per person. We get to have loads speaking into our lives, helping us in our difficulties, encouraging us to remain. Now, if you've been around Redeemer for any length of time, who are the people that you can be a spiritual parent to? Now, maybe you're already doing this, and that's great. Maybe you can find someone. Maybe you have a little space in your life and you can find someone who's newish or not a Christian and go for a coffee and ask how you can pray for them or whatever. It's very, very simple, very basic. But another question is not just who are we spiritually parenting, but who are our spiritual parents? Who's your spiritual parents? Who are the people that you go to? Are you seeking out others in order to grow? That's generally not something that our society says, you should always be asking people, hey, can you pray for me? No, you have to show yourself to be independent, right? No, we get to be freed from that. We get to be dependent here. Are you seeking out others in order to grow? Because none of us have this all sorted. This is how a church can remain in Jesus, in his words and his love, and follow his commands. Much fruit comes from this. A church that lives this out, it's invigorating. A community that's always doing that is that honest with where they don't have it right and also so encouraging with the love that they have, that's the kind of organization or family or community, whatever kind of word you want to put on that, that's what I want to be involved in. It's attractive and it's empowering. And we all need it, and we all need to do it. Now, it'll look different from our different kind of backgrounds, our different gifts, and even how long we've been Christians, things like that. That'll be different, but that is why it's really good. We need that difference. So there's fruit. There's also joy. Look at verse 11. And the result of remaining, Jesus says, so that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be complete. I've told you this so that my joy may be in you, and your joy may be complete. Sometimes Jesus, you read the Bible and you're like, why in the world did Jesus say this? Here, he tells us, I've told you this so that you can get this thing. So that our joy may, that his joy may be in us and our joy may be complete. The joy of God will remain in us as we remain in him. And this is beyond any other kind of joy we can find. There will always be more joy than we need. And sometimes, you know, we really need it. When we're scraping the bottom of the joy jar, we're never going to run out. It's so much, in fact, Jesus says it completes our joy. I never knew joy could be incomplete until Jesus told me. But then when he says that, it's like, actually, that makes a lot of sense. There are all the other kind of joys that we have in this life. There's always something that doesn't quite, it's not complete, it's not fulfilling, not completely satisfying, doesn't leave me completely content. A life only lived with an incomplete joy is an incomplete life. But with Jesus, what we get is a joy so deep, so wide, so satisfying. It's more than enough. It can be described as complete, a complete joy. This is what we get. And how do we get it? Not by striving, not by having a strong passion, not by theological knowledge, not by having an awesome prayer life. Think of a branch cut off on the ground, trying its best to create some fruit. It's not going to do it. It's not going to find the joy. It's not going to create any fruit. It's absurd. No, a branch disconnected to the vine is thrown out. It's burned. It's destroyed. We don't need it anymore. The way we get this joy is through remaining in him, leaving it all to him, allowing his work of grace to work in our lives. What a gift. What a joy. This is the kind of life that we get to live. And this is how we can do those important things for a long time and actually enjoy it. You know, sometimes we feel passion or need to be part of something bigger, and maybe we'll get involved in it, but eventually, like, we kind of get run down a little bit, like the joy kind of leaves. So we don't really enjoy it as much as we used to. And if we jump in on our own efforts, we can only give so much anyway. Remaining in Jesus is how we join in with those important things that our hearts are really longing for. It's also how we find the most important thing, but it's how we keep it up over time and enjoy doing it. I mean, think of what Redeemer could be like 10 years' time, which is what we're making now, by the way. What we're making right now is what Redeemer's going to look like a decade from now. So your branches here will have fruit that we don't even know what that's going to look like a decade from now. A thriving, worshiping community where people continually discover God's love over and over and over again, where people who are new to the faith can learn about it, where people who have been Christians for a long time get the opportunity to share what it's like, to empower more people to live the way God's called us to, freed from our self-striving, free to remain as a branch in the true vine, not thrown away, but truly alive. Now, we won't be part of this big project if we don't remain. We'll burn out. So let's remain in him, in his words, in his love, in his commands. And because a branch can't graft itself onto a vine, God came along and did it for us. Jesus' death and resurrection is how we get to even be included in all this in the first place. We were off on our own, that engine kind of running amok, stumbling around in the darkness, blinded as well, plowing the ocean, coming up short every single time. Our joy was not complete. We had no fruit to speak of. Little tiny buds maybe, but there was nothing. We were going our own way, remaining only in ourselves, a dead branch cut off from life, destined for the fire. But Jesus came to earth, lived the perfect life, died our death, rose to a newly resurrected life, and has now ascended, ruling over everything. So if you're a Christian, this is who you are connected to. You are united to Jesus, united to Christ. His life becomes your life. His death is our death. His resurrection is our resurrection. All our sin, dead as he was. All the goodness in his life, it's ours. And his resurrection is now alive in us as we rise with him. That means we get to join in him in producing fruit. God could do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, for whatever reason, beyond my knowledge. He's decided to have us join in with it, to be a part of this fruit multiplying process. And out of that, also, we get to experience what complete joy is like. So as we come to Jesus, we remain in him. As we come to this table, we're saying to him, to ourselves, and to our church, we remain in you, Jesus. We're not going to remain on our own striving.